Welcome to episode 2 of Nuggets for Vet Nurses, where we share those tasty morsel bite-sized little bits of clinically relevant veterinary knowledge for your everyday nurse. I'm Marcus Taylor.
And I'm Esther Fan. And from both sides of the equator, we are your show hosts. So you seem pretty excited, Marcus. How's it going in Finland this week?
Well, you know, you've got to put a bit of pep in your step because the weather's not going to do it for you over here in Finland. It's been great. I don't think I've seen the sun for like 5 days. Autumn in Helsinki is a rough time for many people. But I have to say, I have really appreciated the beautiful autumn colors and the parks. All the leaves are reds and golds, and they have like a full-on autumn here. So it's been pretty special at the same time as absolutely freezing.
You know what else is pretty average? Being in lockdown in Melbourne. But as of last week, we were out of lockdown and into our freedom. So regardless of the weather, which actually has been quite good, we are feeling pretty happy.
That's really good to hear. I'm glad you are tasting freedom. What's the first thing you did when you had full freedom?
I actually was trying to get out of work on time, which didn't really happen that Friday, and get my bum down to a pub.
Straight to the local watering hole.
Yeah, exactly. I was late in true veterinary fashion, but I made it.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Today we're going to be talking common cat vaccinations and some of our coolest cases. Not related to cat vaccinations, because even though they're cool, I don't know, we could think of cooler. Today's question came from one of my nurses. She was booking in a new client for a cat vaccination. Then she put her on hold and asked me, "Hey Esther, what's the difference between F3 and F4 vaccinations? And can one booster the other?"
Those are such good questions. F3 and F4 both vaccinate against cat flu and enteritis.
Wait. We know cat flu is an upper respiratory infection, causing the classic sneezing and runny eyes, right? But what's enteritis?
Well, remember, itis means inflammation of. Enterics in reference to the intestines. Enteritis is inflammation of the intestines. Usually we hear this as part of gastroenteritis, inflammation of the stomach and intestines.
Okay, so itis means inflammation. And not necessarily infection. Cool.
So F3 vaccinates against herpes virus, Calici virus, and panleukopenia virus. Herpes and Calici are two components of cat flu. Panleukopenia virus, also known as feline parvovirus, causes the enteritis. F4 contains the additional chlamydia, which is a less commonly encountered bacteria in the cat flu. If you're a cat, you're more likely to get chlamydia if you're 9 to 12 months old, going into a cattery or shelter, or maybe you're in a multi-cat household.
Got it.
Anecdotally, F4 tends to cause more side effects, that is, mild pain around the injection site and lethargy. Usually it's nothing a good night's sleep won't cure.
Yeah, it's important to note, these aren't allergic reactions. They're just minor side effects. Like when I got a sore arm and felt a bit off after getting my flu vax. So can F3 booster F4 and vice versa?
Yes and no, actually. Immunity against herpes, Calici, and panleukopenia will be boosted with either. But unless you give 2 F4 vaccinations 4 weeks apart, followed by the yearly boosters, protection against chlamydia won't be maintained.
But as mentioned, chlamydia isn't super common, especially in adult cats. So for most cats in situations, boostering one with the other is just fine.
That's right.
Now, I have to say what everyone is thinking. Does feline chlamydia have anything to do with human chlamydia?
Yes and no. That's going to get annoying, isn't it? But
you are annoying.
What can I say? The bacteria are both from the same genus, but are not the same species. The human STI is Chlamydia trachomatis. Feline chlamydia is Chlamydia felis. Humans don't catch Chlamydia felis. So there you go, guys. You can't blame your cats if you've got chlamydia.
Phew, that's awesome and slightly awkward. Okay, let's put this into a case study. I adopted my rescue cat, Perchik, as an adult. He was vaccinated with F4 at the shelter, but this made him a bit sleepy and sore around his shoulders for about 24 hours. So is it okay to use F3 as its annual booster?
Remember, the main difference is that F4 covers for chlamydia, but this bacteria doesn't commonly wreak havoc. Given that he's over 1 year of age and will not be in a multi-cat household, he's at low risk of contracting chlamydia. The F3 will boost to herpes, Khaleesi, and panleukopenia viruses, and will be totally fine.
That's great, because it's pretty much what I ended up doing. So, to end, I wonder if we should share some of our favourite cases with our listeners. I actually thought about sharing our favourite fails today, Marcus, but I thought since we're getting started, it might have jeopardised the future of our podcast if we exposed too much too soon.
Safety first, right? We've got to keep our reputations intact for at least the first two episodes and then...
all downhill from there.
Yep. So I would say one of my favourite cases. I've got a really cool one about a lamb, but I think that one can wait to...
to have lost our reputation.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to redeem it. So I'll call her Miracle Jessie. Actually, I can't use Miracle Jessie because her real name's Jess. It's too close. Give me a second. Miracle Molly. Let's call her Miracle Molly. Okay, for sake of client confidentiality. So it was one of those classic late Wednesday nights where it was just me and one nurse on till like the 7 o'clock closing. And it was like 6:40 or something, and the phone went, and I was like, please, not something serious. And then like I walked off, and then I came back and she had hung up the phone, and she was like, there's a dog, it's unconscious and seizuring, the guy's been trying to do CPR on the dog, and they're bringing it down like right now in their farm truck. And I was like, oh, okay, get the stuff ready. And this dog came in, and the dog had actually died, and the farmer had resuscitated so many lambs, he did CPR on the dog and gave her mouth to mouth, like blowing through her nose and like pressing on her heart, and brought her back to life. But she had like a really weak heartbeat and barely alive. So I brought her in and gave her oxygen, heat pads on her, all of that stuff. She was like seizuring every 4 seconds and completely unconscious. Was doing supportive therapy. And I said to the guy, I was like, this is looking like really bad. He was saying, well, should we put her down? And I was like, you know, it might be looking that way. Probably it's going to be the best thing. She's not like responding. And he was like, is there any chance whatsoever? I said to him, you hear about people coming out of comas after months or maybe even years, and there's all kinds of crazy things that happen in medicine. I can't say for sure that we can't bring her back, but the chances are very low. And he was like, well, if there's even 1% chance, then I want to do everything I can for her. She's been like such a good sheepdog, and she's the last one of her line, and I've never bred from her. You know, he really loved the dog. And so we continued the supportive therapy, and I gave her diazepam, and the convulsion stopped, and slowly her temperature started to climb back up, and slowly her heart started to get a little bit louder, but she never gained consciousness, and she was still blind by the time I sent her to after hours. And I'll cut to the chase. When I came back the next day, I couldn't see the dog with him, and I just assumed the dog had died. And he's like, oh, Molly pulled through the night. I was like, oh, well, where is she? He's like, she's in the truck. And he went and got her. And she was still blind, but she was able to like move her ears a little bit. And over the next 3 days, we gave her supportive care and did everything for her. And one morning I came back to the clinic and I could hear this super loud barking, and her sight had come back. She was barking and eating food, and she like made a complete and full recovery. And he got his dog back, and he was just so happy. And yeah, so it was like a really touching moment that he had like brought her back from the dead, and he didn't give up on her even when she was so bad, and we were able to bring her back. So Yeah, it was a cool story.
Are you tearing up right now, Marcus?
Not telling.
Lucky it's a podcast, not a video stream.
Exactly.
Oh.
So how about you, Esther?
Yeah, so mine also occurred in a farm practice, even though I'm solely in smallies right now. I have to say that nothing beats mixed practice. Just like you, you never know what you're going to get. Actually, I kind of take that back. Some days you know exactly what you're going to get, like a 5 a.m. start and hundreds of cattle to scan during milking and being in the firing line for the proportional amount of feces and urine.
Yeah.
But other days, it's like a box of chocolates.
Yeah.
So there's one time I was in the mighty Waimate, which is 3 hours south of Christchurch, and I was sent to an alpaca stud. Usually the boss serviced the stud, but I was coming back from a call in the area and the boss was at lunch. How nice, he got a lunch break. And there was an alpaca that was unpacking, that's giving birth and possibly in trouble. So actually I've never done an unpacking before, unless you know count unpacking all my online shopping boxes. Uh-huh. And I haven't done an unpacking of an alpaca since. But I guess I just sort of approached it like I would the back end of a cow, because I suppose same difference, right? Uh-huh. So I stuck my hand in and had a feel, and then I remember pulling it out and saying, if she was a cow, I'd say she'd had a twisted uterus. So I phoned the boss, who told me to bring her back to the clinic. So we loaded her into actually the client's sort of minivan type thing. And turns out she did have a twisted uterus. Mm. And so we got to C-section her. Wow. So all the nurses and the owner were crammed into the surgery room and just sort of photographing the whole procedure. I'll put up a picture or two of it on Instagram if you like. So most of the time when I'm doing, say, an artificial insemination or carving or C-section or something, I always joke with the owner or the farmer. And I say, if it's successful and there's a girl, you can call her Esther. And most of the time, they're just kind of like, ah, ha, 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 good one, good one.
As if.
Yeah, I know. And I've never had anything named after me, damn it. So I did the same thing. I said, you know, if this is a girl and it's alive, you can call her Esther. And you know what? The Kriya was a girl and she had black hair, just like me.
Yes.
And they named her Esther.
Oh, this is so good.
I know. And the coolest thing was that alpaca stud, all of the alpacas are named after native plants, apart from Eric and Esther, because Eric had been C-sectioned by one of the other vets, Eric, and then Esther was mine.
That's so great. So instead of being called Ko-Fi.
Yep.
Or Tutu.
Exactly. Toy Toy.
Esther,
yeah. Yeah, I've never had anything named after me yet again, but I don't need to because I got this little baby alpaca.
That's such a good story. Like, those moments are what you work for and what you remember during the tougher times as well. So,
yeah, well, being in the firing line for feces and urine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if F3s and F4s didn't warm your heart, those stories should have.
Yep.
We hope you retain the knowledge and fuzzy feelings till next time when we talk about lung collapse.
Ooh.
Don't forget to check out our Instagram, Nuggets for Vet Nurses, where you can verify our stories and check out pictures and ask questions and give your feedback. That's all for today, guys. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.